There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. It's Jody, and I'm back again on a sublime Monday after watching 90 Day Fiancé last night. Nothing in my life has ever made me look forward to a Sunday night until this show. And how about that Evelyn? Yowza. Also, make sure to check out the bonus content on patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. I'm itching to get to another episode after this Thanksgiving holiday because, wow, the craziness just gets crazier. Well, let's see how crazy we got with our couples last night, shall we? Begin with the bosom whisperer Molly and her who just beefed in here permaface fiance Louise. As we know from the past few weeks, Louise is having a hard time settling into the role as stepdad. It's not coming as naturally to him as wearing a bellhop's uniform behind the bar or laughing at all the drunk gringos swimming in their own urine at the swim-up bar. So Molly knows just the thing to help Louise feel like a dad. She's Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz, bringing the man with no heart and no brain to a local park where he will find the love in his heart and the filter for his mouth. They're going to spend some quality time together as a family by watching Kensley spread her sassiness around the jungle gym. I'm a little nervous to say this, but I'm just going to do it. I'm not a huge fan of Kensley. She's just a little much for me. Maybe it's because I was raised by a very strict mom and a smart mouth like that was treated to a nice little smack across the mouth in the back aisle of a Kmart. And look how sweet I turned out. Never in my life could I have predicted Molly's ensemble when she stepped out of that car. A black fishnet shirt with some sort of hot pink bra tank top underneath, hot pink gem in the holograms, lycra capris, black high tops, and these hot pink sunglasses that looked like something my sister's Ken doll had as an accessory, or maybe that old school MTV video commercial. It was a lot of look. Something I would have expected more from a teen mom during their second season after their first big paycheck. Or you know what? Very Orange County housewives going to an 80s themed party. Well, anyway, Molly needs to take a breather and lean back in a full backbend extension on a park bench so she can expand her lung capacity, because those layers of lycra and tight bra straps are restricting her rib cage and her airways. Luis is reluctantly playing with Kensley. Actually, he's just repeating things she's saying in an attempt to look like he's interested. He's just killing time before he can get back home and crack open a cold one with Jesse. Luis goes to put Kensley in the swing, and I had a laugh because I don't know if he over or underestimated the height of the swing or over underestimated her weight, but he just kind of drops her, chucks her into the swing. Rookie mistake. Kensley turns into Veruca Salt, and I see the terror and disdain in Luis's eyes. He's clearly not fond of Kensley's precociousness. Is that what we're going to have to call it when she demands, "Go behind me. This is not how you swing. You don't know me. You're not from my country." Something tells me Kenley's been hanging out with Grandpa Molly lately. So she demands to get down from the swing, and she's climbing all over stuff, as a kid is supposed to do at the park. I know Molly is wanting Luis to make a fatherly impression on her daughters and build relationships. But I think Molly needs to be playing with them, not just judging his skills and directing from the sidelines. I know carrying around big boobs all day is hard work, but come on. So Kinsley ends up climbing up one of those weird, curvy ladder things, and Molly is directing and telling Louise to spot her from behind. Now, I'm a cautious mom too, but that ladder was not that high. Even Louise says, if she fall from here, she not gonna dead. It's okay. I gotta start saying that to my own kids. You not gonna dead. It's okay. Finally, Louise is summoned over to Molly and the look of relief on his face. Until she starts talking about Olivia and his role as stepdad. He point blank says to her, it's going too fast. Hey, Molly, listen. Every single person in your life is telling you it's going too fast. Slow down. But then you really start seeing why the rush, besides the 90 days. She needs daycare help. She needs someone to watch Kinsley, and to her, it's a win-win. She has someone to corral Kinsley all day, and she finally has someone to help her unsnap all 8 clasps on her brassiere at night. Well, now it's time for some mother-daughter time, which really is well overdue. Molly and Olivia are going to go get their nulls done because she's been taking Olivia to get her nulls done since she was 4. Nulls? Is that how they say it down there? Nulls? And since she was 4? Really? The first time I had a true pedicure was when I was 25 and getting married. And can I tell you why? Because every single time I have had a pedicure, I've tried quite a few places, I end up getting a toenail fungus. I'm sorry, there's no way around it, but what the fuck? How does this happen to me? Has this happened to you? I am such a germaphobe. I'm picky about places I go to. I scout them out ahead of time. I Yelp, I do everything. What the hell? Chicago suburbs, people, where are you going? Send me your recommendations. All that to say, I would never bring my 8-year-old to get their nails done because I'm terrified of that shit. Anyway, Olivia and Molly are getting theirs done and they're talking to their nail lady, nail tech, pedicurist. What's the correct term here? They're telling her about Molly's new man, Luis. Olivia seems more pissed off about Molly's new pantry grocery store buying habits than she is about the actual marriage. And I would be too, because Molly seems like the mom who would always have some fruit by the foot, and that shit is delicious. Well, Olivia doesn't think that something Molly likes buying and cooking for Luis is delicious, and that is plantains, or as Olivia calls them, plantains. Am I saying this wrong? I'm pretty sure it's plantains, right? Well, I have to disagree because they are freaking delicious if they're made correctly, but who knows how Molly's making them. Now, the nail tech turns out to be Barbara Walters in disguise because she brings Olivia and Molly to tears in no time with her advice. She reminds Molly that it's always been Molly and her daughters. She's got to give Olivia time to accept this. They have a little heart-to-heart, and Molly feels like Olivia is starting to understand that even though Luis is there, he's not taking her place. And they're in such a good place, as a matter of fact, that Olivia is going to help her pick out her wedding dress. Because of what I suspect is that little DUI thing, Mother Molly pulls up to the bridal boutique driving a big yellow truck. Only in Molly's family would a grandmotherly Southern woman be driving a Dayglow 4x4. This is Molly's first and only marriage because she never married any of her bad choices. I actually really like that line, and I think I'm going to tuck that in my back pocket for the future. Just tell my kids or my nieces or nephews, you're going to make bad choices, just don't marry your bad choices. So they go inside and we meet a much different bridal boutique owner than that wackadoo Miss Renee from the Duggar wedding specials. Molly would leave that Miss Renee with a black eye for one of her boobs And Miss Renee would be praising Jesus after seeing any woman wear, gasp, a black bra. Well, Olivia and her mother, Molly, choose to sit in the front row of a 50 park bench lined up like stadium seating. Are there really that many people who come to watch bridezillas try on dresses? That would be the type of occasion where I would have to slip some rum chata or Bailey's into my Starbucks to make it through. Because I have a firm rule of a 15-minute limit on dressing rooms. Trying on clothes is bad enough, but watching and waiting for other people to try on clothes is hell on earth. We hear a cackle emerging from the depths of the store. Ta-da! Molly, the woman who has access to all the bras in the U.S., who specializes in undergarments for occasions just as this, is wearing a full black bra and black underwear. Molly, you are your brand, girl. Bethany Frankel would be reaching for the nearest Skinny Girl TM to get her through this brand summit intervention. This first dress Molly tries on is a corset-style Panina gown. I only know that from watching too many episodes of Say Yes to the Dress. And it was awful. It was a mullet-style dress, short in the front, long in the back. Olivia was almost dry heaving. It was pretty terrible. And then she comes out in another dress. I'm guessing she had already picked this one out previously, and they were just recreating this scene for the cameras. Because how else would they have a dress that fit her proportions so perfectly? I guess it doesn't matter because it did suit her and it was much better than the first one. Well, while the girls are away, the boys are going to play. So Uncle Jesse is taking his compadre Luis out for a little batting cage outing. Every time I see that Oldsmobile Cutlass, I get so happy inside because you know Jesse takes care of that thing like it's his baby. He waxes it up, shines up the rim, probably wipes down the engine parts, gets up there and details it every weekend, because I've never seen a Cutlass since, oh, maybe 93, 94, still on the road in that condition. Usually it's just a high school kid who has zombie spray painted on the side and a die yuppie die sticker in the back window. You know the type. So these two hermanos are having some bro time. Luis is a big fan of Jesse, as am I, and thinks he's a good man. And Jesse loves hanging out with Luis because he helps balance out all that estrogen. I know there's something about that statement that makes me roll my eyes, doesn't sit well with me on a fundamental level, but then Jesse just has to let those long, scraggly locks of love flow, and it brings me back to him grilling all that food. And how do you not love Jess? He even yells for Luis at one point, "Take some swings, big poppy." Jesse. I wonder if they maybe had a few swigs of Jesse's bathtub moonshine, because they kept saying stuff like, "You are so good, man. You are my brother." Jesse asks Luis how he's feeling about being a dad. And then it got deep and dark, kind of out of nowhere. Luis says, "Kensley knows I'm not her father. She doesn't respect me." And then outside, the producers interview him separately. And he says, "Kensley has a father. She can go move in with her father." What? Come again? I hope to God Sean Robinson brings that up during a future tell-all, because that was scary. I mean, what kind of shit is that to say? She can go live with her father? She's what, 5 or 6? Molly had to have busted a clasp on her bra last night seeing that. Now, right after that bombshell, Luis drops another. that he now wants Molly to move to the Dominican Republic, and if she doesn't, maybe he'll go back. Now, I was watching his body language. He seemed like he was laughing or stifling a smile. I think producers put him up to say that, because if you realize, when he was telling Jess the same thing, he couldn't even respond because he was trying not to smile. Just watch it again if you get a chance. He's turning away. That's just my conspiracy theory, and I hope I'm right, because that was some rough stuff if it was true. And honestly, overall, Luis is kind of sucking at this point. You know who else sucks? Elizabeth and Andre. You know, every episode, I see her on her own, and terrible lipstick aside, I always think, you know, she's probably not that bad in person, in real life. And then by the end of her first segment, I'm wishing her to the torture of listening to my son ramble on about Minecraft. I had a mother-son sleepover this weekend, and I think he has a future in military prisoner logistics, because listening to him talk about creepers and bedrock and different worlds is worse than any bamboo shoots down your fingernail beds or water torture. Well, after that tangent, Andre is arriving today. So Elizabeth has found them a new apartment, and she's going to pick him up at the airport. And guess what? She didn't have any lipstick on, and she looked so much better. I think she's one of the few people who could pull off a Peggy Real Housewives of Orange County nude glossy lip. That bolder cat eye, nude lip, you got this girl. Rock that look. After waiting at the airport for the whole crowd to come through, there he is, Andre, with a fresh haircut. Unfortunately, that only emphasized his long bangs, which he did not get trimmed. It was like a reverse mullet. Party in the front, business in the back? I'd tell Elizabeth to tell her man to upgrade to a sports clip haircut instead of the Great Clips Kids Club cut, but no one tells Andracula what to do. Ha, ha, ha. These two hug and kiss and lots of babies. I'm firmly standing by what I said. Elizabeth loves this us against the world stuff. Like, she's pinning her family against Andre and vice versa. Because then she gets to be twee little Lizzie. Everyone loves her, so she's being pulled so many ways by love. Andre gives zero fucks, and he's mentally prepared, and he's going to go with the flow. Oh, okay, Andre. Now you're Matthew McConaughey playing the conga drums, going with the flow. Right. They don't even make it out of the parking garage where Andre is going to be seen in 2 years from now, parking Elizabeth's car, escaping U.S. Marshals for the alleged disappearance of his wife, before he makes his first ignorant statement about women drivers. This guy deserves an Evelyn. You guys, we have a tell-all to look forward to, don't we? What if we get an Evelyn and Andre going at it? Because Andre seems like he'd have zero patience for Evelyn. And Evelyn has never had anyone to tell her to shut the fuck up. Okay, I'm not kidding. I'm grabbing my pen. Pardon the sound. I am writing this down because I am going to write TLC. Maybe I can direct message Sean Robinson on Twitter and suggest they set up a confrontation. TM Jody, just like Bethany's skinny girl, I'm trademarking it. If it happens, you heard it here first. Okay, so now we finally get to the apartment, and Andre is checking out the place. Did anyone else get scared when they saw how Andre ripped that shower curtain open? Like he'd had way too much practice? I'd lock that bathroom door, because you know what's even scarier than Andre ripping open the shower curtain when you're showering. Andre's long, wavy man bangs because of the humidity in the bathroom, like his evil comes out in his natural curl. Oh, why am I cursed with this brain? At least Elizabeth is not cursed with my brain, my anxiety, and a blindness to warning signs, because to her, Andre just makes her feel like a woman. Is that just because she's getting laid on the reg now? Now, here's my disclaimer. It's important that I put this out there now, because it may taint my interpretation of the rest of this couple's scenes. You know how Elizabeth said she's a property manager for her dad? Do you think her dad owns apartments and that perhaps she and Andre are living in one of her dad's apartments that he manages? Think about it. Because remember when Andre said how much was the bed and she answered that it was a housewarming gift from her dad and it was stored outside? Yeah, not a lot of apartments are going to let you store all your shit outside or in another apartment. I think that bed was probably in another unit as a model unit, and he's letting them have it or use it, because when we meet him later, her dad does not seem like the type of guy he's going to be gifting her and her fiance, who he hates, a bed to share. So it would make sense then that her dad would be worried about his financing their life. Because if he is indeed subsidizing their apartment and their furniture, obviously he's going to be upset about it. Now, this is all speculation, but it would make perfect sense. We finally get to the moment where the worlds are going to collide. Brother Elizabeth and Father Elizabeth are going to meet the happy couple at Irish 31. Because apparently Andre only eats and drinks at pubs. Because every single restaurant scene these two have had has centered around a shepherd's pie and pints. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But you know what is wrong? The menu at Irish 31. Because I looked it up. You know what's for appetizers at Irish 31? Southern fried pickles, macho nachos, hummus, chicken wings with your choice of roasted garlic, barbecue, wasabi, or ginger teriyaki seasoning, potato skins with Velveeta cheese, and for main courses, they have quesadillas, flatbreads, and orchard salad. I was near tears laughing reading over this menu. And why not just call yourself 31 American Grill? Don't bring the Irish into this. They have suffered long and hard enough. They do not deserve to be grouped in with a terrible, pointless wedge salad entree. Well, Andre says that Elizabeth is worried that he's going to get into a fight, but that's too primitive. I'm too civilized for that. Well, that's some confidence that's comparable to Evelyn. Psst. TLC, listen to me, Evelyn versus Andre, ratings gold. Finally, in roll the family Elizabeth. Her brother tries to be friendly at first and asks, "So, Moldova?"
"No, Moldova."
I mean, come on, tomato, tomato. At least he was trying. Now, I was taking furious notes at this point. Did her dad ask if that was in the USSR? And if he did, he knows he can pull up Google Maps for free, right? Well, her father finally cuts right to the chase and says, "I don't want to put you on the spot. What's your plan for being here and working and taking care of her?" Looks like Elizabeth got her taste in men from her dad. Both men are direct, demanding, and extremely rude. Andre plans to become a truck driver. Well, that's going to throw a kink in the investigation for the homicide detectives. A serial killer that is a transient, always moving from one part of the country to the next. And we know he frequents Irish pubs. Get on it, gumshoes. Well, even with this truck driver career in the works, Elizabeth's dad is concerned for the next few months. He knows what he pays Evelyn. And if my theory is correct that he's supporting their living situation currently, he's not seeing how the bills are going to get paid. Lizzie pulls an Evelyn and has her head in the clouds and thinks that it's just all going to magically work out because Andre will be the head of household because he's the man and they'll figure it out. Her brother asks, well, if things don't work out here, what are you going to do? Go back to Moldova? And to my surprise, and theirs too, Lizzie says that she'll gladly live there. What? Her dad just sees red, and he lays it out as bluntly as Andre would. Something tells me I'm not going to get to see my grandkids. I didn't even think of anything else except, oh shit, what is Andre going to be like as a father? And I pictured him as, what's his face from Boardwalk Empire? He was the DEA guy. Nelson Van Alden. That super strict, never smiles, don't speak unless spoken to. He's going to be scary as shit. Well, Dumb and Dumber makes some joke about who would want to move to Moldova unless you were the king of Moldova. Worst kind of humor ever. They're the type of dorky guys that thought that, what was it, Wild Hogs movie with Tim Allen, it was just hilarious. Oh, guys. Well, cut to the chase. Father Elizabeth wants to know where they're going to live. Again, I didn't know if this was to find out if he'd be paying for their apartment or he just doesn't want her going to Moldova. Andre can't guarantee where they're going to be living in 10 years, and really no one can. But with that, Elizabeth's dad thinks it's time to sink or swim, and Elizabeth realizes that they are not going to be getting daddy's help anymore. And she shouldn't because she's 27 years old. And honestly, it's time to get a full-time job, girl. And ditch the lip sense. Can I be totally honest with you? Not that I can hear you respond yes or no, but there are certain couples I recap that don't get me as fired up and as excited as others. They're just not as enjoyable. And perhaps you can tell, Molly and Luis being one because it's just sad to me. And Elizabeth and Andre being another because they're just boring. And I'd like to get them out of the way first. And my reward for powering through them is being able to talk about David and Annie, the Evelyn show, Dora and Boots. So here we are with my first couple. I love talking about David and Annie. After the shit show of a joint bachelorette party last night, where David got old, pasty, white man wasted, Bollywooding his way down Thai Street in linen cruise wear, they're headed to Annie's parents' house to pack up and say goodbye. Annie was still pretty annoyed from David's behavior last night, but her friend Asia convinced her that if you still love him, you have to forgive him. To which David smiles because he finds himself quite charming. God damn it, Asia. She's not going to be able to fly you over to the U.S. because David doesn't even own a bar of soap here. You should have been a good friend and pulled a Thelma and Louise and hauled your ass out of there. Spoiler alert, minus the whole cliff thing. Well, this whole scene was gut-wrenching for me. It could be the stomach bug that I'm recovering from or anxiety about which of my family members is going to leave screaming or crying this Thanksgiving, but I almost shed a tear watching Annie and her mom pack. Annie's trying to prepare her mom for the length of time she's going to be gone, and it's clear that Annie is starting to wise up about how broke David actually is. Not totally wise, but just starting. She knows she's not going to have money for a plane ticket for a very long time. Ugh, oh my God. When Annie said she's never had to say goodbye and her mom starts telling her to believe in herself and how far she's come, even if people might look down on her. It was just so sad. I started thinking about how I would be if my daughter was moving away. And it's not like they have phones or computers where they can Skype or FaceTime or email. They don't even have running water or electricity. I mean, fucking David, you know, in the 4 years he's been flittering about, he couldn't have gotten himself a tablet or computer that he could give to Annie's family, or even a battery generator or something. God, I hate him. But the most disturbing thing Annie said was, "My mom trusts David." Ugh, he's conned the mother. No one should trust David. You hear that, IRS? No one should trust David. Or his friend Chris. Just saying, Google it. Well, why Annie is being emotionally gutted and experiencing the most painful sadness of her life, David is all fucking smiles because Annie's dad, Papa, gave me this sash. I'm going to wear it everywhere and under my pillow to bring me health and prosperity. You know what? Ugh. I'm sure in David's mind, he and Annie will be set for, oh, maybe at least the next 30 days because you know he's going to pawn that thing off for the payday loan he's going to have to take out as soon as they land. And in true narcissistic form, he adds that he can feel for Annie's parents. I want to make them proud, make them happy. Hey, asshole, it's not about you. They don't give a shit about you making them proud. You are not their son. They just want their daughter to be happy. They want to be able to visit her and for her to visit them. And just like that, they leave Thailand and fly over to LA where Chris and his daughter are waiting for them. Note, Nikki was not there. She was at home day drinking and thinking this is the last time she's going to be able to put her baby down for a nap without David lounging around her house, probably pretending he doesn't know how to use the washing machine, so Nikki will just end up doing it for him. Ugh. Well, David hasn't been back to the U.S. in 4 years, which again begs the question, what the fuck has he been doing in Thailand for 4 fucking years? And how has he been funding that lifestyle there? He must have some crazy shit on Chris that Chris is agreeing to be his sugar daddy for this long. David is so excited to be back, and he starts slapping his hands to and fro, saying that they've been working so hard to get to this point. Yeah, okay, you haven't worked for years, man. The only work he's done is pull the wool over everyone's eyes to the con man that he is. Annie is scared, and she doesn't want to stay with Chris and Nikki. She wants to stay in her own house, but David doesn't have any money. Of course you wouldn't want to stay with them, Annie, because no one wants to live with a stranger in a new country and to be overstaying your welcome. And I don't think she realizes yet that David actually has $0. I think she thinks in the back of her mind he's got a little bit of money tucked away somewhere. No. So they finally arrive at Chris and Nikki's house, and a bunch of the old work friends want to see David. I will put my life on it that they didn't want to see David because they missed him. They want to see David like I want to see David. Like David's coming back. David. Wait, and he's bringing back a Thai girlfriend? He's going to live with you? Oh shit, I got to see David. I got to see this. Yeah, one friend stood out to me immediately. Antonio. He had a head snap and a mm-hmm that I fell into deep love with. And sure enough, in the previews for next week, he is going to bring it. Well, all the friends are rapid firing questions at Annie. I think it was in an attempt to make her feel welcome, get to know her. let her know that they're interested in getting to know her. I don't think it was a grilling session like it was for our precious Ala last season. And Antonio asks if they're going to have kids. And it seems as if they've never had this discussion because Annie looks genuinely shocked. David answers, "Kids, I'm going to try tonight. If we can, we will." Well, first off, fucking gross, David. Not on Nikki's sheets. Just burn them, Nikki. There's no saving them. Annie is stunned and looks at him and says, "You want to have a baby with me?" I'm guessing David has an issue with his tally-wally-ding-dong, and Annie is shocked because she knows it's not possible unless they get some sort of medical intervention, which she is catching on to the fact that they cannot afford. Well, the conversation quickly and thankfully turns to David's kids finding out that they are engaged, not just dating. And in typical David fashion, he tries to just poo-poo it away as if it's just a little thing. But the whole crowd in the kitchen is shocked that he hasn't told his family. And they're telling him it is a huge deal. They're certainly not going to be happy by it. Probably because I'm guessing he hasn't paid child support in years since he's been hiding out in Thailand. But now, oh, suddenly he can afford to buy a wife. Yeah, smooth move, David. Well, David considers himself a great dad because, of course he does. And he says he's always going to be there for his children. In the words of Chris Rock, what, you want a cookie? But on the other hand, if they don't like his lifestyle, that's on them. What an asshole. You know why David is friends with Chris? Because Chris is an asshole too. Because with a wife and two young kids at home, he's invited their weirdo friend David to stay with them, making it sound like they're just as happy as can be, like the fucking Putmans on TLC. Well, Nikki clearly doesn't want to be the outcast of her Mommy and Me class because she looks straight into the camera to set the story straight. "I'm only on board with this because Chris asked me to." That's all you needed to say, Nikki. We got you, boo. They show David and Nikki to a small room with a bathroom. It's very nice, but not anything crazy. And even that, David is worried about. He doesn't want Annie getting used to having things like a bed, lights, running water, and basic refrigeration because he can't provide that. Who else thinks David is just waiting to get this TLC paycheck and then he's going to spend it like those people who win the lotto where he's living like he's king of the village and they end up broke within no time again? Annie, make friends with Nikki, and then Nikki can steer you in the right direction. Nikki, you are our only hope. You guys, I have to admit something. Maybe Courtney was onto something. She could create those photo calendars of Antonio using createphotocalendars.com and save herself 55% if she uses the promo code PODCAST. Or maybe you can join her and create your own personalized photo books, hoodies, bags, or cards, even things for fundraising. It's so easy. You can upload photos from anywhere and most items ship within 2 days. Head to createphotocalendars.com and use promo code PODCAST at checkout to save up to 55%. Again, createphotocalendars.com, promo code PODCAST. I have been up and down over through and through with this next couple, Josh and Ika. I can't decide whether I like them, hate them, and now I'm erring on the side of hate. After last week's shit show at the modeling agency, Ika has decided to put her modeling career on hold. So, Anna Wintour, if you're listening, she can't be reached. She's on sabbatical. Now, as long as we're speaking about looks, can we discuss Josh? He has quite a checkered past, and he looks really methy and worn down. He's not fooling me with those bad boy gauges. He's trying too hard and he's too old to pull it off. And you know what? You're not a perfect 10, Josh. A few of my buddies in the Facebook group alerted me to the fact that Josh made some comments last night about Ika needing to lose weight and that she needed to hit the gym. This was during the More to Love edition. Well, you know what? Fuck off, Josh. Why don't you go to the dermatologist, get those pockmarks lasered off your face, okay? Who the fuck are you to tell anyone they don't look good enough? He is a 3 at best. And as soon as he opens that meth mouth, he isn't even on the standard number line. Now let's get to the episode at hand. They're at the jewelry store to look at rings. It's explained that Prince Charming himself proposed with a family heirloom, which happened to be his ex-wife's. Bad move. You know what he could have done? Reset the stone in a different setting to begin with. Who the hell recycles a ring? This only gives Ika the ammunition that she needs to work away at what she wants. She is plowing her way forward at the jewelry store to get that ring. I almost choked when she said she seriously wanted a heart-shaped ring. Apologies to any of you if you have a heart-shaped ring. I just think it's a little 80s cheesy bridal magazine ad, but maybe it's just not my taste at all. I've had a bad connotation, taste in my mouth with it. Well, Ika has to change her words because Josh isn't caving in to buy that 2-carat, $13,000 ring she wants. It makes me think he's not serious. No, girl. What makes you think he has $13,000 to spend? You're sleeping on a mattress, on a floor, in a house with roommates. He probably can't even afford to take you to Ulta to get a better eyebrow pencil. Those brows were ridiculous. By the way, if you're looking for a good one, Anastasia Beverly Hills Brow Wiz. I am telling you, it's a very subtle fill. It's very natural, life-changing. Anastasia Beverly Hills Brow Wiz. So Josh says no to Ika. So Ika's like, okay, cool. So we're decided then. Are we all in the same room? He just said no. So Josh calls her crazy, which she is, and she tries pouting her way into it. It was so uncomfortable, and it makes me want to take back everything I said in her favor last week. They leave without buying it, and then they go to lunch. And this was such a crazy-ass conversation. Ika has had time to formulate a new attack plan, and she's going to go with the guilt trip with supportive facts. Why jump into married life if you could not provide a simple ring? I'm disappointed. Any girl would be mad getting a ring with bad memories. Hon, I mean about the ring. I came all the way here. Sometimes I want to go home. All I have is you. I mean, part of it is the ring because it's a promise. That's direct quote. So you're going to go home because you don't have a ring to keep you company? Did he promise her the new ring? And I'm not following the direction you're going with, hon. Josh tries to rationalize the ring and get himself off the hook and says, the ring symbolizes love. When you talk about money or rings, it makes me feel like I'm getting used. Getting used for what? Your amazing room that you have rented from your friends with a mattress on the floor? Or your connections to Bubba the Teenage Wonder at the talent agency? Now, this again is verbatim Ika's next line. Just try to follow the logic or lack thereof. I just hope you keep promises and the ring. It's not about expenses and the ring. It's about having a baby and a family. Wait, what? In the same thought, she said it's about the ring, and then it turns into having a baby. As if Josh hadn't gotten himself deep enough into this huge hole he's in with empty promises, Now he has complications with his ability to conceive that they're going to have to work out first. So are we thinking it's a vasectomy reversal, or maybe he only has one ball, or maybe he's got some kind of piercing down there from some dare that he performed all high on meth? Spoiler alert, skip ahead if you don't want to know their current status. Okay, so they're married now, but I don't think this one's going to last. I don't even see this lasting 5 years maximum. All right, who gave you maximum cringes last night? Nicole or Evelyn? Eesh, I know, Sophie's choice. I'm going to go with... All right, let's go with Nicole and Azen first. Surprise, surprise, Azen has convinced Nicole to go to the gym with him. The gym is called Move Up. M-O-O, like moo a cow, Move Up. I mean, could it have a better name for a girl who loves a burger and a milkshake? Do you think she sweats whole milk? As they walk up to the gym, Azen has a pep in his step. He is so freaking pumped. This is his element, and good for him. Nicole, on the other hand, wasn't planning on going to the gym while she's on vacation or on any day that has the letter D for diabetes in it. I mean, she said she's not opposed. She just hopes she doesn't hate it. Well, Nicole, I would think you would figure out what a workout feels like and whether you love or hate it at this point when you're 24 years old. Azen, on the other hand, hopes to work in a gym because that's what he loves to do. Wouldn't that be one of the first things you'd see on a dating site? For example, if I were single and I read that some guy doesn't own a TV and he likes to jam on his guitar and read me poetry, it would be a hard pass for me. Let's say on my profile, okay, I'll just put it out there honestly. I would just say that I like to talk about people on TV as if they're my real life friends. And if I cannot fit in your jeans, or I can lift you up, but you cannot lift me up, it's never going to work out. Moral of the story, be honest. The lies about what you really spend at Target and Home Goods are saved for marriage. Now, they make their way to the treadmills, and I leaned forward in my chair because I didn't want to miss a thing. Azen actually grabbed her by the hand in public. He was actually pretty handsy with her the whole time in that gym. I think he was doing a little operant conditioning. Shout out B.F. Skinner. I minored in psychology, can you tell? Well, anyway, it's basic positive reinforcement. Give her a little affection and she'll do what you want. So before they hit the treadmill, they need to do a little warm-up. Jumping jacks. I mean, thank you, Azen. Nicole warns that she doesn't have the right bra for that. Where's Molly when you need her? She really just needs a good Moving Comfort bra. That's not a plug. Seriously, Moving Comfort, the best sports bras ever. So she starts doing jumping jacks, and it's only then that I realize she's wearing jean capris. I fully thought that they were leggings, compression leggings, because they were painted on so tight. Nicole, that's so gross. No amount of Gold Bond powder or prescription strength cortisone could have eased the amount of chafing that she had to have had at the end of that day. She finally stops her jumping jacks, gets on the treadmill, and immediately goes into respiratory distress. She says she wants it for herself, but I don't think she does. It's a damn miracle Azen doesn't know how to count in English, because he was cutting those reps short. Did you hear that? 1, 2, 4, 5. You know, come to think of it, actually, Nicole probably didn't even notice herself, because I'm sure there's a good reason Starbucks doesn't let her near a cash register and instead puts her on coffee stirrer refill duty instead. Okay, you guys, that scene when she was doing the squat and hold, I didn't know if she was going to cry or shit in Entenmann's coffee cake. Azin's asking her if she's feeling burning, and I'm sure she was, because she probably had a stage one yeast infection at this point with the stress her body and the denim was under at this point. I can appreciate Azin's motivational speeches, but I think he needs to give Nicole short-term goals. Saying, imagine how you're going to look 1 year from now, that's like dog years to Nicole. Tell her how many more Frappuccinos with whipped cream she's going to be able to carry home after work because her arms are going to be so strong, or that it'll only take her one trip from her car to carry all her packages of mini powdered donuts into her apart motel. Nicole has been watching way too many interviews with Monique, and she's all about this big body love stuff. You know what? You shouldn't be ashamed of your body, and if she's happy, then fine. But then don't go tell Azin that you're going to change and do this and that, and then pout and whine and don't do it. Just be straight with him and say you don't want to do it and you won't do it. And you know what? Your partner should love you for who you are. And you then have to be smart enough and strong enough to walk away if they don't. And Azin doesn't, and he's clear about that. He tells her he doesn't want to go to America if she's not going to work out and eat healthier. You don't want him to ask you to change, but he is asking you. So what are you going to do about it? You got a daughter, Nicole. Once again, get your shit together. Now, I have a question for you. How attractive is Nicole to you, mathematically speaking? Azin is 55% attracted. Now, I'm not a genius, but what 55% is he talking about? A smart human uses only 10% of the brain. So for Nicole, it's what, 3% if we're being generous? Her personality isn't anything to write home about. So that's maybe 10%. So where's the other 42% coming from? 42 is likely her BMI, but that's the part he doesn't like. We need the women who inspired the movie Hidden Figures to figure out this calculation. Finally, Azin has had enough of trying to get Nicole out and about. Do you remember when Nicole told her mom that Azin better be taking her out because last time they stayed in the whole time, and that if he wasn't going to start taking her out, she'd know how things were going to go? Well, shit. Nicole is the one who never wants to go out now. She is lazy. She never wants to hike, walk around town, go to the market. He has tried taking her out. All she wants to do is stay inside and lay in bed. And we find out that she sleeps until 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What the fuck? What is May doing during this time? Is Azin's aunt, who doesn't even speak English, taking care of her? Or is she laying in bed all day on a phone or her iPad? This is crazy. That poor little girl. Mother Nicole, you need to get full custody of May. And Nicole needs a serious medical checkup if she really needs that much sleep. Well, here we are, May and Nicole laying in bed. May is on Nicole's phone. It's gross to me how often a screen is shoved in front of that toddler's face. And I'm someone who lets her kids play on iPads, so I'm not anti-screen time at all. Azin tells Nicole that he just wants to go out with a friend to a cafe just to get out of the house. But Nicole doesn't want him to go. She wants him to stay in, have a nice dinner, and let's just relax. He promised her he wouldn't go out. It's only 2 months. Why is it hard not to go out? Oh, I don't know. It's only 2 months. Why is it so hard to eat some veggies and take a walk? Nicole is beyond a stage 5 clinger. She is like a code red clinger, high alert. As it admits on camera that it's hard to be home in the evenings because, cringe, of May. We find out that May wakes up crying every night and she has to have diaper changes. She's waking up to eat and she's up all night. Pause right here. What the hell is going on? She's 2 to 3 years old, right? She's not a newborn. This should not be happening. Either she needs to see a pediatrician immediately, or this is what's really going on, I promise you. Since Nicole is sleeping all day, May isn't getting fed, and she's understimulated. So she's drinking a shit ton of milk at night at bedtime. Because she's hungry, it keeps her full. But now she's filling up her diapers at night. Let's not even get into potty training, it's a whole other story. And then she's waking up hungry because her lazy ass mom has been sleeping all day and didn't make her any meals. And she wants to play and burn off the energy she's been building up all day sitting next to her mom on a bed. The fact that Nicole records May saying, "We figured out that she's waking up crying because she wanted lunch." Lunch? Bitch, it's the middle of the night. She should have had lunch at lunchtime 12 hours ago. Meanwhile, Azin is having a very civilized conversation with a friend with braces, shout out TLC dental issues, and the friend is giving Nicole way too much credit and leeway. Hearing that Azin is changing May's diaper didn't sit well with me either. I don't think he's a creeper, but you know what? I just don't like it, and that's my opinion. Azin doesn't know what he's going to do, and Nicole thinks the solution to all of this is to talk all the time, all day long. She needs so much therapy, but I fear the 2 years that she has left, if she's under her parents' insurance plan, which I'm sure she is, but you know what? 2 years is just not long enough time to fix the issues Nicole has. Well, here we are, the portion of the podcast called The Evelyn Show. With 70 Days to Wed and a groovy little guitar tune intro, we meet up with Evelyn and David going apartment hunting. They pull up to the first one, and I had the same question as David. Is this a good neighborhood? Apologies to the fine people, minus Evelyn of Claremont, but it did look a little dingy. Kind of depressing, but Evelyn says she's only specific about the wedding, not everything. And then David calls her on it and she says, "Well, yes, the decorations, because I want to be the homemaker," with that smug nose in the air smile. No one but you and your family band thinks you're clever or cute or funny, Evelyn. Even David low-key hates her, and I love it. So they walk up to the $1,200 a month apartment with a charming old refrigerator blocking the front door, and Evelyn calls up the realtor to see if she's meeting them or what. And we learn that in Claremont, it's the honor system. You just leave your house keys in the mailbox. So they walk in, and to my surprise, Evelyn fucking loves it. It was a truly stunning, stunning turn of events. The place was a dump. And Evelyn couldn't get enough. Is she an actual human? The place had a feeling to me like it would be on a previous episode of Hoarders, and this is the diamond in the rough that remained under the layers of pooped on newspaper and a worthless porcelain doll collection. And David hates it as much as I do. He wants something small, practical, something that fits their needs. They don't need a house when it's just the two of them and Evelyn's ego. Immediately, Evelyn counters back, why is it not practical? She loves that her family is only 5 or 6 minutes away, which is a pretty big bonus for my music and my church. Oh, fuck off, Evelyn. Don't go dragging music and the house of God into your narcissism. She's convinced this apartment is a bargain because it includes heat for the 5 fucking extra bedrooms they don't need. And as much as I think David is an asshole, he's the asshole that Evelyn chose and that she needs and she deserves. He counters that they can get a smaller place that suits them better for $800 or $900. And before he even finishes his sentence, Evelyn attacks, but we're in Claremont, so this is what there is to find in Claremont. And then she turns on her signature Evelyn charm to producers alone and says, he needs to deal with the facts and live in Claremont. He's here now. How has she survived this long without someone trying to beat the shit out of her? Don't get me wrong, I'm all bark, no bite. But there had to have been people she went to school with that saw through this bullshit of hers, right? Maybe this is her long time coming karma, making a complete ass of herself on TV. Yeah, let's see how well this does for her music career. And you know what? That's a good segue. Let's talk about her music career. After all this wedding planning stress and apartment hunting, these two lovebirds need some time to relax, blow off some steam, and spend some time together, focusing on Evelyn. David's going to get to see me in the recording studio. You know what? I take back my comments about my son's Minecraft talk. Listening to and watching Evelyn singing in her studio is the ultimate form of non-physical torture. You know, I think David is full of shit when he says, Evelyn is a very talented girl and I'm lucky to hear her sing every day. It's like telling a dog to heal. She just backs down and relaxes in her attacks so she can just enjoy the ass kissing, but he gets her to just shut up and be quiet. So on the way to the studio, we learn about producer Mike, who didn't at all give Evelyn a discount in return for her plugging his studio. She feels like she has a good thing going with Mike, and he does pretty inexpensive things for her, which is another reason for living in Claremont. God, she's so transparent in these subtle attempts to make reasons why they should stay there. And David is no idiot, and just as he starts to call her out on it, the true musician, Evelyn says, I can't think about this. I need to focus 100% on the music. Fuck off, Evelyn. If you focus any more on yourself, you're going to go damn near cross-eyed. So David and the entire world give her a side eye in unison, and he's really only asking for 1 or 2 years of traveling, going on adventures to making their dreams come true. But no, it's gotta be Evelyn's dream or no one's, just as David says to the cameraman. And well, since dear Evelyn cannot accept criticism in any form, she refers to her good old friend, God. Let's just see where God leads us, and hopefully he leads us here to Claremont. All together now. Fuck off, Evelyn. So now we arrive at producer Mike's home studio. It was a mix of Little House on the Prairie meets Uncle Jesse's baby bunny themed room on Full House. Mike is the kind of producer that gives you the product you want. And the product Evelyn wants is the type of recording session where the producer kisses your ass. Mike thinks she has a very unique singing style and immense amount of potential. I think she sounds like a Sarah McLachlan CD set at half speed, mixed with the feeling I get when I have a migraine coming on. You know, guys, Evelyn feels like there's a lot of work to do with this song, especially before the bridge, so she's going to need some of Solomon's help. Producer Mike agrees. And he should know, because you know what? I'm committed to podcasting excellence, and I found producer Mike. Mike Cressy fronts his own little band as a guitarist. And like our Evelyn Cormier band, Mike is part of the Mike Cressy Trio. Such a humble group of musicians they are. Evelyn decides to take her relationship problems to the public again and instigates an argument. She tells producer Mike that she's trying to convince David to stay in this area. A successful musician as Mike of the Mike Cressy Trio is, whose only upcoming gig is at the Foreign Legion in Vermont at the end of this January, gives his input that, "I would hate for Evelyn to wake up one day and realize she didn't live up to her full potential. Just see where the music takes you." And Evelyn loved that and says, "It's taken me here." And without skipping a beat, David snaps back, "No, it's kept you here." Boom. I hate David because he's a smug asshole, but I love him because he is a smug asshole to Evelyn. Thanks again for another fun week of laughing and reporting and chatting in the Facebook group and on Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and on Twitter at Reality TV Pod. Again, I will say it till the cows or Nicole comes home. You guys are the funniest group of people ever. Don't forget Patreon for bonus episodes. I'm going to put up 1 to 3 per month, and it's going to get even better. Thank you to those of you supporting me already. I am so thankful to you. I'm going to be able to clean up my sound and improve and bring you the best of the best. So that's patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. Also, check out my guest spot on the My So-Called Whatever podcast today. We had so much fun talking about 90s TGIF and just some crazy throwbacks. So much fun. My So-Called Whatever. And leave a review on iTunes if you can. It really helps me out. And on a very serious note, thank you from the depths of my soul. This Thanksgiving, I am so thankful to have connected with so many of you. You lift my spirits daily with your wit and humor and allowing me to speak my mind and voice your opinions, especially about the lighthearted things going on in the world. I have an episode coming out later this week on romance scams and a little talk about the documentary Love Me on Netflix, so keep an eye out for that. Have a great week. I'll be back soon. Bye.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.